The Catholics of Oz is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to episode 115 of The Catholics of Oz. The Catholics of Oz is a show where we discuss faith, culture, and what's been happening from an Aussie perspective. Whether it's synods or science, apostolate synapse, providence or productivity. You can hear it right now on The Catholics of Oz. Hello, I'm Lindsay Sant, and welcome to episode 115 of The Catholics of Oz. So good to have you with us. I am joined today by my soon-to-be sweltering sister, Caroline Knight. Caroline, how are you going today?
Okay, I think I've started the sweltering. We have three successive days of above 35 degrees Celsius today. So I think, is it 38 or something today? I don't know. But
36, something along those. Yep.
Yeah.
Whatever your tats lottery
it's
numbers
It's already
are
quite
numbers,
warm. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Summer is late
this
March, year.
Yeah, March, summer.
It's going on, going late. Yeah.
And we're also joined by my heatwave hero, Lino Sobol. Lino, how are you going?
I like that one.
Heatwave?
I just felt like some alliteration this morning, so there you go.
Sound like we're like, all we keep on saying, like an independent punk band here.
Yeah.
It is getting very warm, like Caroline said. Summer's coming late, and we're actually technically autumn here in Australia, but it feels like summer's going, I'm going to get paid overtime for this. I'm going to keep on going, guys.
Or I'm going to get started finally. Yeah, because it...
December
and January were fairly mild. That was more like spring, actually. December and January.
Exactly,
yeah.
A couple of days
now we're copping a few heat waves.
It's coming.
It's really hot now.
A few storms.
Going to have a day in the air conditioning, I think, today.
Yes, I think so too.
On the Nintendo or something.
True. That is true. I must admit, we had a couple of days. I mean, I keep on mentioning and people go, not this place again. Can you talk about another place? In Malta.
Yeah.
So, we had a couple of hot days in Malta, and actually I didn't mind, it was dry like Australia. So we can get
but what month did you go?
I think it was
what
May.
Month were you?
May.
Oh yeah, it's still okay. Yeah. If you went in August or then it's very starts getting really humid and then it's really,
really?
A bit unbearable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Very true. Okay. So it wasn't too bad. Yeah, and of course it blue skies and I just absolutely awesome. We gotta get back into our summer gear again, guys.
Yeah, the shorts and t-shirts are still out. Yeah, the hats and the sunglasses. Slip, slop, slap, as they say. All of the, get ready for the
definitely.
Sun.
Definitely,
yeah.
That
and
sun is biting as
exactly.
well.
Isn't that guy that got a different thing now? Had to put our wet hats on. There's something called slip, slop, slap, hat, shade. No, we've got a whole, it's got a whole
shade,
new
yeah,
thing.
It's a whole, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole new thing.
Two more uses.
But just don't be in the sun and put sunscreen on.
Stay at home. Exactly. Yeah, slip, slop, slaps.
Stay at home, basically.
Yeah. And by the way, so this episode is being released when you're listening to it. You would have realized that there was no episode 2 weeks ago because Caroline and I were a little bit under the weather. Lino was ready to go, but we didn't put him through the pressure of doing it on his own. Because it would have been an hour's rant about football weather and
I wouldn't know what to do.
Now that would have been it. Oh no, that would have been a
it would have been great.
Episode.
Yeah, I would listen to that later.
Make it short.
Yeah,
Beyond Borders. That will be. I'll try to find something Catholic in the issues and what's going on. Science. I don't know.
Just science. Fly. No, just get the old hits out and get some Roman concrete going again. Just find a.
I was
about
to go
back
to
the greatest hits. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, that's it.
The greatest hits.
And I'll bring it back out and go part two. Yeah. This is why Roman concrete should be used in the moon next time or interplanetary.
It's cool in hot summer as well.
That's all good. It's all good.
Yeah.
Totally understood. Understood.
All right. Let's get the show rolling. And that's what happens when we do a show for a while. We just banter for ages. So you think we don't talk to each other outside of the podcast or something. However.
Last Saturday was awesome. We were all together and had a good chat together and we haven't done that for a long while, so
it was good.
Was it Lizzie?
So we had Alexander's
birthday.
Yeah, that's right.
It was amazing day, guys.
Yeah.
Amazing day.
Yes.
And
it was fun.
I'm sorry, if we were there almost midnight. I'd just playing games and drinking. I haven't done that for ages.
I'll say this. I am both very happy that Alexander loved his party and I'm also very relieved that I survived because I was dying that day.
You did very
well, bro.
I was a hard day. I still turned up.
And of course, Isabel and everyone else who helped you, man.
Isabel was amazing. She was the party planner. She, because I was miserable, not feeling great at all. And she just.
You still cooked a good sausage, though, on the barbecue.
I glued my feet to the floor in front of the barbecue and just cooked.
Yeah.
And then I died in a chair and smiled at everyone as they walked past. But that's okay. It was good. Yeah. With that in mind, let's move on. If you are new to listening to the Catholics of Oz, welcome. When you listen to this, it'll be a week before Easter, so a great time to be starting. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or your favorite podcast player. Don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on wherever you listen and some positive feedback so that we can hear from you and, of course, reach new people, which is what we are all about, because we love building community. It's not about popularity. We don't care about that, but we do care about reaching people and sharing our positive message through the StarQuest network with them. StarQuest also hosts Catholics of Oz on YouTube. You can just go to SQPN on YouTube, subscribe there, and don't forget to hit the bell to get notifications when new episodes are released. So with that in mind, let's get the ball rolling and start with Faith Beyond Borders.
Well, I'm actually feeling rather good about this. I think we've all arrived at a very special place, eh? Spiritually, ecumenically.
How do you make somebody love you without affecting free will?
Welcome to my world, son. You come up with an answer to that one, you let me know.
Yes, I had to work very hard to pass Latin and theology.
Oh, quite. Those are, of course, the most important things.
Oh, yeah.
I'd sit this one out, Cap.
I don't see how I can.
These guys come from legend. They're basically gods.
There's only one god, man. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
So Lino and Caroline, I've got a slightly different topic this time round. Let me give you a bit of background. A person that we know recently put a question on Reddit in a Catholic women's thread, basically. Catholic women might go in there and ask some faith advice and things like that, which from what I can gather from what I've had a look at. And then we can say she, because this is Catholic women's thread. So then she shared it with us, the question and the answers, because she felt really encouraged. And when I read it, I reached out to this person and I said, I know that what you put there is anonymous and we want to keep it that way, but what you were saying really resonates with what we've been talking about on our podcast in the last couple of weeks, the whole transformation of parishes, and in particular, the thresholds of faith that we talked about from Sherry Weddle's Forming Intentional Disciples book. I said, do you mind if we share what you wrote, or parts of what you wrote anyway, with our listeners, and then say some things about it? Because if a parish is about making a pathway to discipleship for everyone, then knowing who your people are and what they're feeling and where they are in their faith journey is really important. I think sometimes maybe we assume that just about everyone in our parish, because once they're baptized, that's it. You don't need to do anything else. But actually, that there's a lot more for a lot of people. There's a lot more going on. They have questions. They're still on a journey and so on, journey to discipleship. What I'm going to do is read this thread or parts of it anyway, and then talk about which threshold of faith I think it is. And maybe we can just share some responses. So, are we okay with that? We're okay to go on with that?
Yeah, right. Definitely.
And it's not like you have a choice, because this is the topic I'm doing. So you can either talk or sit there. So, yeah. I was just being
Could
polite.
You ask me,
I was just being polite. Ask, yeah, yeah, just
yes,
ask.
Yes, thanks for asking anyway.
No worries.
Yeah. That's right. That's
yeah. So here it goes. I was raised in a Catholic family that I love and cherish with all my heart. My siblings go to church every Sunday, but I'm the one that stopped going. And I became, and this is in inverted commas, the lost sheep. Not that my family treats me that way. I have been a very on and off Catholic since I was about 18 years old. Now I'm 28. I initially stopped going because I was seeking for my faith to be more authentic. I always felt that my faith was driven by trying to make my mum happy, and it wasn't truly mine. I figured that if I left, then I'd have an opportunity to come back, because I wanted to, not because I had to. I spoke to our parish priest at the time and explained that I wanted my faith to be mine and not to be because I was raised this way. He was very kind and understanding, but he was also very close to retirement and didn't really know what to tell me either. I'm ashamed to say that 10 years later, I feel like not much has changed. I might go to church for a few weeks, but then find I'm just really not wanting to be there. It goes from I want to try again to Now I'm here because it makes Mum happy. I thought, maybe if I get to know Jesus, and then maybe I'll want Jesus more. So I tried to learn more through casual reading, online courses, and just discussions with my family. I've also tried watching Mass at home just to take some pressure, to take some of the pressure off. My atheist husband even sat on the couch and watched the Mass with me just to be supportive. I've prayed and prayed about it. It's like my whole life is the dark night of the soul. That's the one reason I picked St. Teresa as my confirmation saint. In all honesty, the more I try, the more anxious I get. Nothing feels authentic. I feel really lost and just don't know what to do. I don't want to be comfortable with not being a practicing Catholic, but I don't want to force it and make myself leave all over again. I'm genuinely afraid of what will happen to my soul, but I'm not willing to push myself to go to church if the reason is simply I don't want to go to hell. I really feel like my lifeline is the commandment, love one another as I have loved you. It's the one way I truly know how to live my faith, because I find nothing more fulfilling than caring for others. And then I also have to worry that my husband and I are thinking of children. How can I raise them to know Jesus if I can't even be consistent? And then, sorry for the long post. God bless for your reading this far. Your prayers and advice are appreciated. So I thought, when I read this, when this person had shared it around, I thought, this really hits the thresholds of faith that we were talking about in I think it was two episodes ago now. So probably episode 113. That's my guess. I'm bad with numbers. Because there's quite a few things to unpack there. Because this person is clearly questioning, how do I take the next step? How do I go to the next part? Now, I think for a lot of us, if we were to read this, it could be quite perplexing. It's, what do I say to this person? Can I say anything that will help to make it better? Sometimes I think we do get these questions. Now, we're lucky because we're reading it. We've got time to sit and think about it. But what if it's right there in the moment? What if a person comes up to you and says these things? What do you say? What can you do that will help to make it all better? And I think the answer is, actually, there's nothing you can say in the moment that will make it all better. We don't have the advice. People do have advice, but there's nothing in that moment that can instantly turn this person into a disciple, if that makes sense. But what we can do, I think, is promise to accompany them from that day onwards and be there as a support. Getting into the nuts and bolts of this just very quickly, I was looking at the thresholds of conversion, and I want to make it clear that talking about this person and talking about any person, maybe those who are listening, there's a person that you're helping to accompany in the faith. The Forming Intentional Disciples book reminds us that no person is a project that we're working on. So we can't treat people like a project. We are authentically real friends with this person, regardless of a faith decision they make or don't make. They might go through some of the thresholds and say, no, this isn't for me. We are still their friend and we love them and accompany them regardless of that decision. So I was looking at the thresholds that Sherry Weddle had noticed were common through the different spiritual conversations she would have with people. And just a reminder, there are five of them. The first one is that there's initial trust, and that is a person has come to make some kind of positive association with Jesus Christ. Maybe they thought Pope Francis is a good guy, or another pope, or they've come across a saint who they thought was interesting, or they've run into a Catholic charity that they volunteered for, and they thought, oh, the people here, they seem to be really genuine about what they're doing, or they've got grandma's rosary beads, or whatever it is, right? They have a positive association of some kind. And that trust becomes spiritual curiosity. That's the next threshold that a person crosses, where they start to desire to know just a little bit more about Jesus, just learning something more about the faith, a little bit more than what they had before. They're just curious. They have questions. They're not open to personal change, but they've moved beyond trust to being curious about it. Then there's spiritual openness, where a person acknowledges to themselves and to God that they're open to the possibility of spiritual change. And the text says this is one of the most difficult transitions, especially for postmodern believers. It's not a commitment. It's simply admitting they're open to the possibility of change. So it's very difficult to go from openness to the next one, which is spiritual seeking, where a person has moved from being essentially passive to actively seeking God to know what God is calling for him or her. They're at a stage that's engaged in urgent spiritual questions, seeking to know whether they can commit to Christ and his church. And then after that, there's intentional discipleship. And this is the decision to drop one's nets and make a conscious commitment to follow Jesus in the midst of his church as a disciple. Now, when I was looking at the thresholds and thinking about this statement, I was
stuck somewhere between spiritual openness and spiritual seeking. And people may agree or disagree, but I'm going to go with openness here, the third threshold. Not quite yet spiritual seeking, but simply spiritually open. So this again is they acknowledge to themselves and to God that they are open to the possibility of personal spiritual change. So this person seems to me to be open to spiritual change, but hasn't quite got to the point where they're ready to say, I want to move to that next step where there's a bit more urgency now. I have an urgent need to adopt this, and then they're going to drop their nets and move into discipleship. What do you think? Does that sound, from the five that I've read to you and where I've placed this at the moment, do you think that gels with you guys?
Yeah, it does. But I think I disagree slightly saying that I think there's a bit of seeking because this person has actively gone to Mass and has been watching Mass on TV and like trying to actively take part. So maybe half, maybe half, in the middle of both.
I agree.
Yeah, that's what I'm feeling anyway.
Yeah, I got a sense of there's some openness definitely, and there are elements of seeking as well. It is maybe at the threshold of openness and into seeking, we're almost ready to cross over completely. Yeah, Lino, what do you think?
Yeah, this is a journey that she is going through. I think we talked about this, our spiritual journey and everything. And with her, it seems she's still, Caroline, do you agree? She's still seeking, or she's still questioning her faith? What do you think? Do you think that's the way she's trying to figure out?
Yeah, there's an active want there. That would be the openness. And I think that's the first step, isn't it? Yeah. There's a desire there. And then, and like you said, it's a journey and there's a certain path. This is her path. It's like going forward and going back and going forward and going back. But that's her own personal journey. Yes. Even if you attend Mass every Sunday, you may not be feeling 100% connected all the time. I don't think any of us are always 100% there, 100% perfect Catholics all the time. It's impossible. She's definitely on a path towards something, but. Who knows? This person will get there one day for sure. And I think also the fact that this person is a naturally nurturing person shows that she is actively participating. She said, I go by love one another. And she does often put other people, like we all know this person, she does often put people before herself and will do anything to help if she can.
Yeah.
So to me, it's more active because, okay, maybe it's not formal practice. Yeah. There's not a formal practice there yet and all the time.
Yeah.
But the fact that she's thinking about it a lot, there's a desire to me. There's a desire there. And sometimes God calls us all the time. He doesn't let us go, especially if you're finding that you want to respond. Yeah. And God's going to keep calling her. And she's going to respond as best she can in the situation she's in.
We talked about the first threshold, which is that initial trust. And you mentioned, Caroline, that she said that love one another I wonder if somewhere when this journey became like this genuine reset, trying to get a more genuine, authentic faith, that love one another has been the initial trust that sort of kept her going, if that kind of makes sense. And then that can lead into spiritual curiosity, as well as we talked about how bits of faith content. So Saint Therese of Lisieux, she mentioned as well. So these are at least two of, you're not going to write every single thing in a Reddit thread, but these are at least two things we know of. And then, like I said, going to Mass from time to time, watching Mass online. So keeping that connection. So there are three little threads there that have gone from the start through to where we are trying to discern where she is now, which is interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Let's pretend we're somewhere around openness and seeking, right? So I wanted to just rehash what the text says about these particular stages, but I wanted to focus on some of the advice that was given in terms of what you might do when you accompany a person at this stage. What Sherry says about the openness stage before we get to the seeking, which was we're saying maybe somewhere in between those two, right? At the openness stage, it says that the person has a vulnerability. It could be that this stage was triggered by a major life event, or it can simply be that this person is wanting to contemplate the deeper mysteries of faith. At this stage, people at the threshold of openness will, in inverted commas, try on what it would be like to be a person of faith. They try it on, basically, all right? They're having a go at participating and moving on. Now, you can stifle this stage. You can actually get in the way. As evangelizers, we can actually damage it by saying, you just have to believe. All right? So it's, yeah, so
it's locked to unpack that when you say, yeah, well,
yeah, you just got to believe, right? And look, belief might come easier for some of us because we are at
different.
Exactly. You
know, it's not for everyone.
So she says, resist the urge to pressure them beyond what they're prepared to do right then. Moving through openness is a slow process and patience is vital. Our care for the person needs to be genuine no matter what they decide. So at this point, no matter what they decide, they need to know we are truly their friends. All right. So that was one thing. Then there was some other advice here that I thought was interesting. Now, not every bit of advice works for every single person. All right. But it does say that such people do exist in our parishes. And it says they're in our midst, they're already baptized, they're already Catholic. What we need to do is recognize, honor, nourish, and support the work of the Holy Spirit in their hearts. And then we'll gain radiant new disciples. Sherry talks about an experience of Eucharistic adoration as a possible way, right? So again, this has to be when a person is ready. But Sherry talks about her own experience here. She said, this is how, first of all, how one parish leader, before her own experience, how one parish leader describes using adoration to draw the baptized into a deep relationship with Christ. This person said in the book, one of the biggest things our community lacked was an experience of the supernatural dimension of the Christian life. It just wasn't on our radar. So they had unintentional encounters in the liturgy, but never something that they felt or experienced as having an impact. Eucharistic adoration with teens and adults has been a powerful experience of the presence of Christ. Eucharistic adoration gives them an experience of encountering God. So Sherry in the book says about herself in her own experience, I've heard many stories about conversions triggered by accidental exposure to the Blessed Sacrament. I myself am Catholic today because I encountered the Blessed Sacrament when I was a completely clueless college student. I'd gone through a major conversion experience the year before and was looking for a place to pray during the day. Protestant churches were closed, but a large Gothic Catholic church nearby was open during the day. I had no idea why. I walked into, it was called Blessed Sacrament Church, and she's put a big exclamation mark there, and felt a powerful presence of God that I'd never felt before. In an instant, that experience of God's presence leapt over any of the anti-Catholicism of my fundamentalist childhood, and a most unexpected bridge of trust was suddenly in place. It was that experience of God's presence that kept me coming back to Catholic churches to pray. I would walk into lovely Protestant churches and think, it's beautiful but empty. That presence for which I had no explanation wasn't there. And so I came to regard Blessed Sacrament as my personal prayer place. Nevertheless, my evangelical identity was still firmly in place and I wasn't open to changing. Then one day I prayed inside Blessed Sacrament Church. I stopped in front of a statue of what was clearly a young woman. A sign told me that her name was Catherine of Siena. I didn't know anything about Catherine, but I knew that she must be a saint and that Catholics believe that you could ask saints to pray for you. On impulse, I did. Kate, I said, you understand what it's like to be a young woman. They say that I can ask you to pray for me. I want so much to find the purpose for which God has created me. I need to know what I am supposed to do. If you can, please pray that I find it. And then for reasons I still don't understand, I suddenly lifted my head and directed my next prayer to the ceiling. And God, if there's anything to this Catholic thing, I'm open. The next moment, I mentally dismissed the whole idea as possibly the wildest, stupidest thing I'd ever done. But I didn't take it back. I didn't grasp the full significance of that moment until I discovered the thresholds many years later. I had acknowledged to myself and to God that I was open to personal change. I had crossed without knowing it into a new spiritual world. As a human heart opens to Jesus Christ, it becomes increasingly difficult to remain neutral. The person growing closer to discipleship must cross the next great frontier from being open to change as a mere possibility to engaging in an active spiritual quest. He or she must cross into the threshold of spiritual seeking, which is maybe where this person might be on the verge of openness to seeking, because there are elements of seeking that we've found in there as well, haven't we? So listening to that description and that story, now they're two very different people, all right? We're not talking about a person from a Protestant background. And by the way, if you're Protestant listening, we're not dissing Protestant churches. This is, we're just talking about a person's experience and how they came to faith in the Catholic Church. But do any of you have any, see any links or insights between the story and anything from the book that I just read from Sherry's experience?
I think there's the common thread of openness between them both, yeah, and having a desire and a want to experience further faith or difference in faith, or to go further along the path. Yeah. And I think it's a beautiful story too. How lovely, yeah, is that? Praying to a saint when you've never prayed to a saint. Amazing. Yep, totally. So there's a big leap of faith right there. Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And I thought, yeah, like you said, the praying to a saint, and then this person that we know is talking about a saint, asking a saint for that. There was just so much correlation between the two stories, wasn't there?
Yeah.
I'll just finish with two brief things here. And again, I mentioned this was going to be a little bit freeform because I'm just following our conversation and then thinking of the bits and pieces that might fit as our conversation builds here. Because again, this might be a conversation we actually have with a person, right? So, you know, where do we go from here or where do we go from there? When the person has fully crossed over into the seeking, just two brief paragraphs about what it says about seeking here. It says, our primary task when someone has reached the threshold of seeking is to help them focus on the person of Jesus and the central challenges of the kerygma, or the proclamation of the good news. And it says, leave other doctrinal issues for later. It's all about the person of Jesus at this stage. The threshold of seeking is also an excellent time to help them explore the vast diversity of prayer in the Catholic tradition. Different people respond to different kinds of prayer. If the rosary doesn't scratch where the person itches, perhaps the Liturgy of the Hours, Lectio Divina, Eucharistic Adoration, Praise and Worship, Taizé, etc. There's a whole lot of different prayer methods that help us to connect to Christ. It is both challenging and intimidating to realize that as evangelizers, we need to model what it means to seek after Christ and somehow share that it is going how it is going, both the ups and the downs. But seekers need to see what life is like for an authentic disciple of Jesus whose struggles are real and whose victories are therefore believable. So that there's more, but I thought, again, just taking a piece from the seeking, because I think that maybe there's some correlation with that person as well, but whether they're just about to move from openness to seeking or not, or whether they're already seeking, according to the book, that person needs role models. You know what I mean? That person, whether that's family, friends, someone in their parish community or whatever, that person needs role models, not to say this is how you do it, but just to see your life and to see how your faith is helping you with the real struggles that we all have, all of us. And how is our faith carrying us through? It's not solving our struggles necessarily, all right? Faith is not a cure-all, but it's the idea that God accompanied us through our struggles, and our struggles make sense, and therefore we can deal with them just a little bit more than we might not have without God's help. I won't read. The second thing I wanted to say is, and I won't read it all because there's about five or six replies, and I was really heartened by the beautiful replies that this person received from just anonymous people around the world. And they were saying things like, I agree with you. You are ready to try a relationship with Jesus now. And here's how I think you might do it. Here's what worked for me. Here are some resources you can access. Here's some ways to pray. Some of them mentioned, just spend some time in Eucharistic adoration. Don't worry if you don't know what's going on. Just go be there. Maybe go with someone else. To all those anonymous Catholic women who will never know who you are, that advice, you could see that the people in this group really care. And none of them have said, you just have to believe. They've said, I remember what it was like to be at your stage. There are some of the things that you mentioned that I'm going through. They've mentioned some things like that. So I think that empathy and that genuine, the way that they wrote back genuinely, they haven't written back with, I'll fix you. Right, they've written back with, I remember what it was like to be there, and here's what got me to the next step.
Yeah.
Yep. None of them.
It's more the journey together, isn't it?
It is.
And we've talked about this. Yeah. And this is a beautiful, perfect way to use social media.
Yes. Agreed.
In a positive way.
But I agree completely, Lena.
Yeah, it just annoys me that we have to use it as a negative a platform. But this part is so positive. And it's great to know that you have positive responses from people who have experienced it. And like you said, anyone could say, you just have to believe.
Yeah.
That is so much to unpack. And like you said, Liz, we don't have a whole hour and a bit to talk about that.
Yeah.
And that's in that sense, it's, and it's great to know that you have people who have, like I said, been through this and been through the journey with it. And it's with everything, with our faith, with what's going on with our families, everything. What do I do with my, how do I repair my car? How do I repair my house, my relationship, everything like that. And a lot of people will say, I've been through this. Here's what my story is and what I went through. And when people like this in groups listen to each other and know where it is and how things happened, it's a great platform to be in and a group to be in. And as you go through, you notice little things in your traveling, your faith. Okay, I miss this. Oh, I need to maybe encourage myself to do more with this. Yeah. But it is myself that it needs to be encouraged with.
Mm.
It can be encouraged with other people. I'm not saying it can't be, but it'll be up to yourself to do that and to be open. And like you said, Lindsay, family and friends will probably be the closest people to do with, a parish priest, anyone who's very close to the person can do that. But it really depends on the person in a way. I'm not sure.
I can think, Lino, of a person in our lives, you and I, who was a mentor at an important part of our growth in our faith, and that's our friend Peter from church, right? You and I, Peter is older than us and was ahead of us, and he had has a deep personal faith, a love of Christ, is clearly a disciple in what he does. And he was patient with us. Mostly.
He
has a wicked sense of humor. That's why. But in the formation of our faith life, he was there through, we haven't got time to go through the whole story, but like he was there patiently guiding us, listening to us, challenging us, all those kinds of things. Yeah.
Definitely.
Sharing a beer and having a faith chat once in a while. And not that's the way to do it, but that's the way that he did it with us. Yeah.
Cup of tea or a coffee.
And there were teas and coffees. Of course there were. Yeah. But it was a chat, and it was genuine faith discussions that met us where we were at in our thresholds of faith, which I had no idea existed until, just recently. But yeah, it's really interesting anyway. So there you go. I think we'll put a pin on it there. Unless Carolyn, do you want to add anything else? Are we good to move on?
I don't know. I think Lino finished it off perfectly. Agreed. They both did. So yeah, it's great.
Great. All right. Yeah. I'd be really curious if anyone else has. If anyone else is in the same boat as us, knowing people or is one of those people, anyone who wants to share an experience or a story, we'd be happy to share it on this podcast, anonymously, of course, if you'd like to do that, to be part of this conversation. It's so important. As we talk about parish renewal and church renewal, all those things. So with that in mind, let's move on, because Caroline has a very interesting topic as we talk about science.
Ah, what a fine day for science.
Do you have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Can you reverse the polarity?
I'll do my best.
Caroline, I don't even know how to introduce this one, so I'm going to hand it. I'm very curious about it, by the way, but I wouldn't have a clue how to introduce it. So I'm going to hand this one over to you.
Another awesome.
It's awesome. So, Caroline, really awesome. It's in your hands. Let's go.
Okay. So I'm going to be talking about ancient Egyptian baboon DNA today. All right.
Now, something we all talk about around the coffee table. You'll get the idea. It's around the water cooler.
Yes. Today I'll be talking, it's a little bit of history and science today. Sometimes it's environment and science. Sometimes there's a lot of different topics. So today I'm mixing one of my loves of ancient Egypt and science. So let's go for it. In the ancient days, before there was currency, people used to trade between themselves. So like ancient cities used to trade between themselves, and ancient Egyptians were the same, and they used to go on trade missions to various regions around them, such as Nubia, what is today Sudan, Lebanon, Canaan, many other cities around them. And they would bring back luxury and other goods that they needed. They used to send goods to other cities and trade them for the items they needed and weren't able to produce or obtain in their own area. And such goods as cattle, gold, ivory from Nubia, cedar wood from Lebanon, pottery and construction materials from Canaan. But there was one other important commodity that they used to trade for that they couldn't find in their region, and that was baboons, okay? Baboons
Everyone needs one. They're
were
useful.
Very important to the ancient Egyptians. That's right. They used to love animals. They used to worship them. They used to have gods based deities based on animals for their different virtues, their different aspects of the animal that they used to like, and they would worship them.
It does make sense.
It does make sense. They used to use their natural environment to explain certain things.
Exactly.
So baboons for the ancient Egyptians were associated with the ancient god of the underworld named Babi, and also the deity Thoth. Now, Thoth was associated with knowledge and scribes, and the baboon image of Thoth became an assistant in the judgment hall in the underworld. So this for after death. The god Babi was depicted as either a baboon or a human figure with the head of a baboon. He was known for eating souls of the unrighteous once they had died and their souls passed on to the other side. So the ancient Egyptians who used to worship Babi, the baboon god, used to perform rituals and spells so they would be saved from Babi's wrath after they died. They would then go on to the Hall of Two Truths, where if they were good, Babi would actually protect them by not letting them go to the side of the evildoers.
This sounds like the plot of Moon Knight, the Marvel hero. Yeah, if anyone's seen it. Anyway.
I don't know.
I'll throw that in there. Anyway,
I've heard of it.
Not gone there.
You've got to watch it. It's one of my favorites. Yeah, anyway. Go on.
Put it in an entertainment section sometime. Yep. Now, baboons were also associated with other ancient Egyptian deities, and I've included a link on our note. There's a great article which goes into a lot of details about baboons in ancient Egypt, if you want to have a look at that. Now, baboons, as I mentioned, were not native to Egypt. They were sourced from the land of Punt. Now, Punt was mentioned in many ancient texts, and it was known as a popular place for pharaohs to obtain luxury goods. From King Sahure, who lived as early as 2450 BC, to Queen Hatshepsut around 1500 BC. Now, she was cool because she proclaimed herself a pharaoh, one of the few female pharaohs to reign Egypt. Yep. And then on to Thutmose III and Amenhotep III, who were Hatshepsut's successors, and then all the way down to Ramses II in the 12th century BC. Now, ancient archaeologists have always wondered where this land of Punt is. They didn't know straight away. And where from Punt, they used to source luxury goods as myrrh, frankincense, malachite, leopard skins, and, of course, baboons. So it was all the real luxury stuff. Like, it was a real special occasion when they went to the land of Punt. That's where they would get all their goodies.
Where does the millionaires go to? Where they want to buy a boat or
this was the top stuff.
The real luxury.
Okay. So as I mentioned, it was described many times in text, but the location was actually never properly disclosed. This is where the baboon DNA comes in. Okay. So through the DNA, they've been able to locate where Punt was. So through the studies of DNA from baboon that was mummified in Egypt between 800 and 500 BC, the land of Punt may have been tracked down. Not only that, but it's thought that it may have been the port of Eritrea, or used to be called Adolus, as was known by the Romans, the ancient Romans. Now, baboons used to be kept in temples and often mummified and offered to the gods, and mummified baboon teeth is actually what they used to obtain this DNA. So in 2020, a researcher, Nathaniel Dominey, he's actually a primatologist at Dartmouth College, was able to obtain DNA molecules to reveal that the baboon's diet in early life, and it revealed that they came from a region around modern-day Somalia or Eritrea, and these baboons were mummified around 1550 BC to 1070 BC, and also from the Ptolemaic era, 305 to 330 BC, and that's when the Greek Ptolemies ruled Egypt. Now, in a more recent study published in September 2023, another researcher, Gisela Kopp, from the University of Konstanz in Germany, along with Nathaniel Dominey, so they teamed up, they extracted mitochondrial DNA of a mummified baboon first excavated in 1905 in Egypt's Valley of the Monkeys, which is located at Luxor's western bank of the Nile River. Now, DNA from 14 baboons was extracted, but only one of the female baboon contained DNA that was actually able to be studied. Now, this one was mummified between 800 and 540 BC. This mitochondrial DNA was compared to the DNA of baboons living in the 19th and 20th centuries, and the origins of those baboons were known. So to study this DNA this way means they could give more specific geographic locations than the previous study of discerning diet through the teeth. So according to her mitochondrial DNA, this baboon was related to modern-day species known as Papiohamadryas, found in the plains and open rock areas of the Red Sea coast. Additionally, she had a line on her tooth called an enamel hyperplasia that develops in response to stress. Dominey, the researcher, said that this could have resulted from being captured at a young age, possibly around 2 years old.
Whoa.
Enduring a grueling sea voyage thousands of miles north to Egypt, where she lived the rest of her days as a venerated embodiment of Thoth, the god of wisdom, before dying at around 6 or 7 years old.
Lived a good life.
Yeah. So by studying and comparing the DNA, they were able to show that the baboon was most closely related to populations from, which I mentioned earlier, coastal Eritrea. And Gisela Kopp says this is close to the ancient port of Adulis, as mentioned. So she also thinks that perhaps Punt and Adulis are the same, but the ancient Egyptians may have been visiting there first, calling it Punt. So there you go. Archaeological clues found through the study of ancient baboon DNA, and they hope that in the future the other animal DNA can be studied to see if they come from the same region and perhaps further confirm the mysterious location of Punt. Yeah. Now, as a cool side note about baboons, just through my watching of documentaries and things, if you look up the tomb of Tutankhamun, yes, so everybody knows all about King Tut, his successor, which is actually, he used to be the vizier of Tut before he became a pharaoh after Tut died. If you have a look, I recommend you find a podcast or a YouTube video about it, but you will see on their tombs that they both have a wall which they have the 12 baboons representing the god Thoth on them. So they literally have, it's amazing if you look at it. It's a wall of baboons.
Yeah.
And these two died like in the same era, so they had quite a similar tombs, and there's a bit of controversy and all that, but I would love you to go and look it up and research it and watch some YouTube videos about it, because the story is quite interesting. The whole thing about King Tut, and I could go on about it, but and his father Akhenaten and all that, Queen Nefertiti and all that. It's quite a tumultuous period in ancient Egypt. But it's quite interesting, and I just had to take the opportunity to, because I'd heard of this ancient area of Punt as well mentioned in other podcasts, and they'd always said they didn't know where it was, and then I came across this article and they're pinpointing it now, which is amazing. Science, yay science and yay history. That's a good one.
I was reading while you were talking, I was looking at an article as well from lifescience.com, and so it says here that the baboon is the only animal not native to Egypt that is linked with Egyptian deities. It's a little odd that Egyptians took such interest in baboons. They tend to steal crops and break into homes looking for food, yeah. making them difficult to live with. And then it finishes yeah. with the people who coexist with baboons today don't really like them. So
it's fascinating. True. It's fascinating. They used to lock them up in temples and things and sacrifice them and all of that. I don't think they enjoyed living with them as such.
Poor baboons.
But I think there was things that like the aspects of a baboon was something like sometimes they can look quite serene and like thinking and look like quite regal. And then they also worship the sun when the sun comes up. They love the sun. Yeah. And the ancient Egyptians used to love the sun too. They had the sun god Ra, and they also had the Aten, which was like a big god with hands coming down. Anyway, but so there were definitely things that they loved about baboons that they thought it was worth it enough to be traveling to a faraway land to actually get them and bring them back to the area and involve them in their ceremonies. But it's a really interesting topic. It's just something amazing.
It's amazing. You know? Because like I said, Caroline, a lot of animals we see on the hieroglyphics we see definitely the cat. We know.
Yes.
I joke with Bernadette. I'm just being silly here, but sometimes I think the cat.
Yeah, they're so dominant, they managed to take over ancient Egypt.
Tell us we need to eat something, we need to go out somewhere. I'm not saying that they had doors back in those days, but the cats were on there.
They had doors.
Pharaohs loved animals. And then
they did. Animal lovers.
Exactly. And then when we think about it, I'm being silly, and stop me if I am. This is their faith in the
city. No, it is.
They knew about
it. It was how they practiced.
It was their faith. Exactly. Yeah, that's right.
And then they were... They're thinking, oh, okay, so the cat does this and the baboons do this and many other animals do everything. The birds in the air, the creatures on the ground, they have their own meaning of their own faith in what they believe. And it's huge. We have a Sphinx, people, that they thought it was a god. There you go. There you go. We go to our cats. There's your cousin who was...
worship
and as a god.
This is actually a really interesting point you make, because we don't worship animals, but we definitely use animals as symbols in our own faith. We have a dove, that talks about the spirit hovered over the waters when Jesus was baptized like a dove, which goes back to the spirit hovering over the waters of creation, right? You've got Jesus is the new creation, so on. And we use the Lamb of God. Yeah. We use animals as analogy.
Yes.
We certainly do that. Now, I forgot where the tradition comes from, but I'm not sure entirely how true it is, to be honest. Someone will have to look this up for me. But I think in some places in the church, they use a pelican as a symbol. Is it a pelican? Apparently, I don't know. Or was it another
stork.
Bird? Another bird.
Was that the same thing?
But apparently maybe it's not a pelican, but they pierce themselves so that their young can feed off their blood when they don't have anything else to feed their young. And that was Christ's blood.
Oh, yes, I've heard something about that.
Okay, I'm going a bit blank on it now. I'll have to look it up properly. I don't know which. Can't be a pelican.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, maybe I was thinking about pelicans because at Phillip Island a few months ago. Yeah. Anyway.
I think you're right. I heard something about this myself. Yeah.
But anyway, the thing is, the use of animals as symbols is not unfamiliar to us. St. Francis of Assisi even preached to animals. So there is in our faith, not the worship of animals.
I constantly talk to my animals. Yeah. I know they understand me.
They're at the threshold of curiosity, aren't they?
They do.
Yeah. All right. So let's finish up there. That was a great topic. Thanks for that, Caroline. Then look where you led.
Thank you very much, Caroline.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, wow.
Let's have a really brief talk about entertainment.
I don't know where you get your delusions, laser brain.
Not what we came here to do.
No, but it's what I'm going to do.
I have a plan.
You've got a plan.
I have part of a plan.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
While we were going through the show, because I wasn't sure, but now I do have one. I'm not sure if you guys have one, so if we have one, let's throw it in the mix. So my one's really brief. On Netflix, I've been watching Avatar: The Last Airbender. The live action version, so with real actors and so on. Now, people are really nervous about this because Avatar The Last Airbender is a very popular cartoon series. It was three seasons long. It came out in, I think, 2012 or around that time, or maybe earlier. It's beloved by a lot of people. So, and then there was a movie that M. Night Shyamalan made, which I think was the first season in one movie, and everyone hated it. I never watched it because everyone said, don't watch it, don't watch it. It's terrible, it's terrible. So I never watched it. But, and so I think people were nervous about a live action series because Netflix has been doing this. They've got into the taking, you know, anime style cartoons and making them live action. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm about five episodes in. I actually think it's good. It can't tell every story in the cartoon series, but what it does pick, I think, is good. I like the choices so far. And I think when we heard it was being announced, my son Damien and I said it needs to have one line in it, which is "my cabbages," which for anyone who has watched it knows that's a very famous line. And thankfully, without ruining it, without spoiling it, they do it in a really interesting and funny way. So I like that they, yeah. But anyway, I'm enjoying it so far and I recommend it. It's just fun. So it's fun to watch. It looks great. And I think by and large, the actors portray the characters from the cartoon really well. So that's my one. Lino, have you got anything?
For me, we've been watching game shows.
Oh, yes. Really? What games
are you catching up on? Yeah. Game shows. So, Tipping Point, Todd Woodbridge.
Tennis player.
Players tennis.
Yeah.
And Deal or No Dealer with Grant Denyer.
Oh, they brought that back, didn't they? Yeah,
he's fun. Me and the kids love watching it.
Yeah, he's doing very well. When they do the ads like 2 or 3 months before it even started, especially through the tennis.
They flooded it through the tennis with those ads, yeah.
And I thought, okay, they got Grant Denyer. Game shows. I think he'll do it very good. And he does a great presentation.
He does.
And Todd Woolbridge on Tipping Point.
That's an interesting choice for a host, isn't it? Yeah.
I'll have to watch that one.
Yeah. It's good because it's positive.
Oh, good.
It's fun.
Good. Yeah, so it should be.
I'm not saying all game shows are nasty. It depends if watch Gladiator or whatever it is. But it's such a great family show.
Oh, great.
And also, I can't remember what we just watched on Netflix. I think we just finished. I talked about He-Man. Actually, I've not watched any streaming services for a long time. Yeah. We've just been.
You've been on the game shows.
Game show. Yeah.
Getting old, Lino. Look at you.
Answering questions.
Yeah. No, it's good.
I know.
Yeah. No, well done. All right. And Caroline, anything been on your radar?
Yeah, I guess I've been watching, if anything, it's always something nerdy with me, but this week it's been...
I want to say, when people say we are nerds and geeks, they go, look,
own it.
We're proud of it.
Own it.
Just back off.
Own it.
Totally. Yeah. Oh, I'm not ashamed. Yeah. No,
I'm sorry, I'm having my rant here. Sorry.
Yeah. No, I love to learn.
It's cool to be a nerd now. Don't worry. Yeah, that's right. It's cool to be a nerd. Yeah. What's yours, Caroline?
But I've been listening to a podcast that is dedicated just to the Tudor era, English history. So like the kings and queens, the Tudor period and topics around that. And so I have been watching YouTube videos about that, but then it also get suggestions on the side. So I watch a few YouTube videos about the Vikings and so things. I went into that area and then I thought, I don't know much. Shamedly, because I think it's quite popular about French royalty history.
Yeah.
So I watched a bit about that.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just trying to, I just love to, learn about, I might hear something on a podcast and just go, oh, hang on, I need to go research that a bit more. So that's where I find my enjoyment. Yeah.
So here's Lido and I talking about cartoons and game shows, and you have to go make it all sophisticated and stuff with your tutors and your history and your science and your...
I'm not sophisticated. I'm just curious.
Okay, you're smarter than us, all right? Yeah. Okay, all right,
Well, I don't know about that.
Settle down, people. Well done. Get my cup of tea.
Yeah, that's right. Great work. Yeah.
Only kidding, listeners, only kidding.
Yeah. All right, we'll have to wrap it up there. So we want to thank everyone so much for joining us for episode 115 of The Catholics of Oz. But before we go, we would love to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create the show. Today, we would love to thank Michael M., Kim L., Michael S., Mary N., and Andrea J. Through their generous donations at sqpn.com/give, they make it possible for Catholics of Oz and all of the other great shows on StarQuest to continue. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Also, we would love to know your thoughts about our topics from today. You can send us feedback by visiting sqpn.com/Oz, where you can also find show notes and links for today's episode. And while you're there, don't forget to sign up to the Insiders Club newsletter, sqpn.com/about/newsletter. And also, if you haven't yet, sign up to SQPN's Discord, sqpn.com/Discord, and come have a conversation with us and some of the other listeners. You don't need to be a patron for that. You can do it absolutely for free. and be part of that community because it's a lot of fun there. We also have a Catholics of Oz Facebook page, facebook.com/Catholics of Oz, spelt O-Z, and you can talk to us about our episodes there if you like. We can also be reached by email at catholicsofoz@sqpn.com. Caroline, thank you so much for being part of today's show and sharing about ancient Egyptian baboons. That was awesome. I loved it.
Thank you. Yeah. That was really fun. I enjoyed that one too. Yeah.
Yeah. And Lino, thank you so much. Stay cool today. Don't sizzle too much.
No, it's okay, guys. I won't sizzle. I'll just get a bit tanned and brown, but I'll see how I go. But everyone, take care. God bless. And yes, stay safe, everyone who's listening in Australia. It's going to be hot this
winter. And yeah, Moomba, stay hydrated.
Yes, yeah. Right. We have a festival called Moomba here. So
yes.
Take care and yeah,
Labor
just
Day holiday,
drink a
yeah.
lot and keep in shade and have fun.
Yes.
Have fun,
people. And what we should also say, because this episode will drop around the beginning of Holy Week, I believe. So
oh, yes.
A happy
yeah,
Holy
wow.
Week to you all. I hope it's a
yes.
I hope
oh,
it's
yes.
a,
definitely.
A deep and spiritual time for you all, and have a happy and holy and wonderful Easter when we can all stay together. He is risen and celebrate that wonderful mystery of our faith as well. Otherwise, I'm Lindsay Sand. Thank you so much for joining us for episode 115 of The Catholics of Oz on StarQuest.
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Star Wars. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/Star Wars. We'd like to thank Patrick McCaffrey of Moonshadow Studios for editing this episode. To have your audio edited professionally and with care, check out more of Patrick's work at moonshadowstudios.biz. That's moonshadowstudios.biz.